said.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
You got it in the back of your mind that you wanna put another cold red line through another name on your hit list. Your hit list, the name on your hit list.
That's actually, that's new iteration right here. Hit list. Shout out to Micah. I'm ready for summertime. I went to the One Love Music Festival this past Sunday. Iteration was one of the headlining bands. Just absolutely destroyed it. Plus, close out with the great Tom Petty tribute, which everybody was excited about, to say the least. And so it's just, it got me back in that vibe. I mean, I love reggae music. I love island music, by that, like Hawaii and even some of the Polynesian stuff I get down with. And I haven't really listened to any of that stuff recently. Been more country just because I've been driving around on the road a lot, storytelling, you know, Tom T. Hall stuff, you know, obviously Johnny Cash. But it's nice. I feel like I'm back in the mix now, with that genre, which was really a lot. That was primarily all I listened to, when I first came out to LA. I mean, you can't go wrong. Like how can you listen? Okay, this Stick Figure right here. How can you listen to this and not just be in a great mood? I guess it helps when it's 65 outside. I mean, just good vibes, you know? I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. It's episode 159. Thank you again, Micah and Iteration. Had a great time. One Love Music Festival in Long Beach, which to me was kind of cool because, Sublime kind of spawned that genre where they combine punk music and dance hall with reggae and even Grateful Dead and mashed it all together. And from that created, you know, this whole generation of people growing up listening to them, myself included. Eventually they all become musicians. And so the whole thing going down in Long Beach, where, you know, Sublime essentially got started, and having known people that went to high school in Long Beach in the 90s and remembered going to house parties with them playing, which are some great stories in themselves. But it was cool because we were just sitting there. The waters were out on a peninsula. The water's everywhere. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you live in Southern California or if you ever want to visit, do it during next year's One Love Reggae Festival. It's 2 days. It was sold out. I mean, 15,000-20,000 people. It was a great time. But and check out, Iteration. Got some new stuff out. So, but yeah, like I said, episode 159. This is the Jack Ham episode. Now, Jack Ham was probably the biggest badass to ever come out of Pennsylvania. He's a linebacker from Pennsylvania. Went to Penn State, then drafted by the Steelers, was a part of the Steel Curtain, got 4 Super Bowl rings with the Steelers, 8-time Pro Bowl, a part of the 75th anniversary NFL team, for whatever that's worth, was the 1975 Defensive Player of the Year, played under Chuck Knoll, legendary Steelers coach, just an all-around badass. So a lot of times you think Pennsylvania, quarterback state, you know, all those quarterbacks from the 80s for some reason all came out of Pennsylvania. And like Jim Kelly and Marino and I think Kozar even. He might have been Ohio. But anyway, all that aside, number 159, Jack Ham. It's hard to find a 59 is where I'm going at. But this episode, clearly Marino free, Eric Marino free this week. I got into, you know, well, I've been into baseball and baseball history. I recently came across the series of great articles by Ernie Harwell. And if you're not familiar with Ernie Harwell, excuse me, Hall of Fame announcer for the Detroit Tigers. And in his early years as a kid, was actually a bat boy for the Atlanta Crackers, which was the Negro League team that everyone thinks is hilarious when they're like, it was a Negro Leagues team that was called the Crackers. That's hilarious. Yes, very, very funny. But Ernie Harwell had a lifetime in baseball. Spent his entire life in the sport. And the majority of his major league, you know, I think it ended up being like 40-something years. Started with in like, it was 1960 all the way through 91 with Detroit. And you're like, that's 31 years. And then you're like, oh, what happened there? Because then he went the 92 to the Angels. Well, what happened is Bo Schembechler, which for you younger listeners, Bo Schembechler was the lifelong coach at Michigan. You know, the Paterno to Penn State, the Bowden to Florida State. And was there with the legendary coach. I grew up, I was like a Lloyd Carr era. That was Michigan when I was growing up. It was primarily like the Lloyd Carr stuff, like Chad Henne and Hart. I can vaguely remember the Desmond Howard stuff as a little guy. But Bo Schembechler is like the god of all gods. If you remember, he dies in 2006, the night of or the day before Ohio State and Michigan, who are 1-2 in the country, play each other. And it was like this legendary. So I don't know if people were like, oh, he died, you know, just he was worried about the game or whatever. But Bo Schembechler was such a dick that when he left Michigan, he went and he took over the Tigers and ran that Harwell out of town. So I don't know what I think. Something like he probably said something about Schembechler in passing or somebody else or who knows what. But clearly he was out. And then the team was sold. Schembechler was gone. They brought Harwell back immediately because he was a fan favorite. But he did this series called Black Diamonds. And it features a lot of, I think that it's a six-edition series. So it features six different Negro Leagues baseball players, some of the legends like, you know, Cool Papa Bell and Satchel Paige were the ones I've checked out so far. But the Satchel Paige one, I wanted to feature this week and play in its entirety. And if you're not a baseball fan, then you're going to hate this episode. But this Satchel Paige is my all-time favorite player. I mean, first of all, no one knows how old he was. A lot of people speculate he was born in, I think it was 1902. But just played for Birmingham Black Barons, Pittsburgh Crawfords, the Kansas City Monarchs, the Kansas City Athletics, the Cleveland Indians. Took a 14, I think, year hiatus between the time he pitched for the Cleveland Indians and the Kansas City A's, which was in 65. Yeah, so I think he stopped pitching in 51 or something and picked back up again in 65. Played in the first night games. And that's what this interview covers, all this stuff. It's fantastic. He does debunk a couple of the tales that everyone's heard or read. He got his how he got his name, he clarified, because I always thought I had read and heard even first-hand accounts of people like, oh, Satchel got his name. He used to carry a lot of bags. He looked like a bag tree, a satchel tree. So they called him Satchel, where they used to straight up, Harwell asked him straight up how he got his nickname, and that wasn't the answer he gave. So I'm like, oh, okay, apparently. That's why I love baseball. Like, you just when you thought you know a story, like you'll hear another tale or another version of it, in this case, from Satchel himself. But just a fantastic story. And then one of the highlights, if you will, of the thing was of the entire career was probably in 1968, and that's when the Braves signed him for it ended up being 158 days, because that's how many days short he was of qualifying for like the 5-year Major League Baseball pension. So the Atlanta Braves brought him in, even though he hadn't played in, at that point, I think it was 3 years. Yeah, it was 3 years because it had been 65. And he played a couple exhibition games, and it was kind of a coach manager type of a situation. And then Then he hit the exact amount, 158. He Jeff Kinged it, and he was like, "All right, I'm gone." Qualified for the what was $250 a month pension. Took that happily. And when I say Jeff Kinged it, that was the Royals first baseman in like 90, I think 96, 97, 98. But similar deal. As soon as he hit his like pension, he just retired. He hated baseball. He was just really good at it, and he just walked away. He's like, "Yeah, I don't actually like this sport at all." Excuse me. So that's what that means. But it's also interesting too, because towards the end, he gets into Jackie Robinson explanation. Mean, you know, talking about one that Jackie wasn't good enough to even start for the Kansas City Monarchs, so he sat the bench in the Negro Leagues, and then two, that he was just a good choice. You know, educated, he traveled, well mannered. You know, didn't have a temper or anything like that, or he could control it. And Satchel also points out that he was not a good choice to be number one because he had a loud mouth and would spout off and would have caused problems. So it's great. I mean, those are just a few points. And again, the series is called Black Diamonds, from Ernie Harwell. The interviews took place in 1966. And it's, if look, there's firsthand account from Satchel. You're going to hear some in bombs, if you will, some verbiage there, just to give you a fair warning. The word Negro is said, I don't know, about 58 times here in the next 20 minutes. So, which in 2018 is kind of weird to hear, but then you're like, and just especially to hear it come from Satchel and Ernie Harwell. But again, 1966, this was recorded, but just giving you a little buffer there so you're not shocked, or you know, you're driving with the car window down and someone's like, "What the hell is this guy listening to?" It's like, nothing, just old baseball stories. Just continue on your way to Walmart to get some more stuff you can fry in your oven. But, all right, I got sidetracked there. All right, so we'll go into that. I was trying to think, there's something else that I felt. Oh, wanted to say we got a couple new listeners, followers. I want to give a shout out to Jake. At Fortify Sky from Nevada, thanks for listening. And Ames, at Blocks Down in Colorado, guys, thanks for listening. Appreciate you guys. And you, not those two, you guys listening in your car, at work, wherever, go to iTunes or wherever, subscribe, leave a comment, leave a 5-star, 3-star, 1-star, leave a whatever star. It's so that we can help build the network a little bit, get the word out that much easier to everybody else. And you know, if I'm hungry, you know where I'm going. Don Carlos Taco Shop. It's on Pearl Street in La Jolla, kitty catty corner from the world famous Comedy Store down in La Jolla, California. Amazing food. Follow the Don himself at Eat a Burrito. And that's on Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. But more importantly, if you're in San Diego, La Jolla, Encinitas, turns out to me Solanas, a great thing Solanas, to me. Whatever. Anywhere really south Oceanside, go to Don Carlos Taco Shop. And if you guys need a t-shirt, print it up, UnionPressKC.com, UnionPressKC.com. Jerseys, they can do that. Family reunions, they can do that. Businesses, small, yeah, absolutely. Big, sure, why not? If you got more work for them, they can handle it. They're quick, they can do design work for you. And very, very much affordable. That's UnionPressKC.com. And with that being said, when we get back, it's going to be Satchel Paige interview from 1966 with Ernie Harwell from the Black Diamond series. Enjoy. Meet Dr. Well. That cool Papa Bell, the fastest man on earth, did dwell as cool Papa Bell. Ugly word, ubiquitous and often heard as a substitute for someone's Christian name.
For 20 years, Satchel was a star in the Negro Leagues, and then with integration, he pitched the Cleveland Indians to a pennant in 1948. I caught up with him in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where he was helping young minor league players along, and I wanted to know if he really could have been as good as people say.
Steve, I can't tell you that. Only thing I can say about it is, you know, you hear things, and the places where I go, it's like I just come out of Cooperstown about a week ago, and I was up there for an induction for some of the kids that's going in the Hall of Fame. And it feels good when you hear them say that, because you had a lot of men out there thought a lot of, like Bob Feller and Dizzy Dean and Lefty Grove and those people like that. And then I come along and they call me the best pitcher. You know, you got to feel good over that. But for me to say I was the greatest pitcher, I couldn't tell you that.
You started playing in Negro ball way back.
Yeah, 1927. I started in Chattanooga, and I played there in 1927 and one part of 1928. And Birmingham bought me, and I went up with Birmingham. And I guess in the last 4 years after that, I guess I was sold about five times a different baseball club till I ended up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania with the Crawfords. And we organized that club in 1932 there. And I had been going around a lot barnstorming before even ever got into any league that we had. We had four or five colored leagues ourselves. We had the Southern League and the National League and the Eastern League. And I was playing down around New Orleans and Birmingham and those places like that in Atlanta before they even ever found out who I was, I guess.
Now, I heard a story that when you started off, you had the terrific speed, but it wasn't until later that you got the control.
Yes, see, a man never learns speed. You're born with speed, see, but you can get the control if you're wild when you come up. But we had a lot of players when I come up, never did gain control. They could throw the ball hard, way harder than I could, far as that concerned. But they couldn't gain control to be a pitcher, and we had to still keep them in outfield. And we had some catchers was like that. You know, you had third basemans like that. I'm going to tell you something. I don't know whether you know it or not, but we have some men in infield can throw hard as pitcher, but we never could make no pitchers out of them, far as that concerned. And that's the way it go. It go just like that. A pitcher, when it comes to be a pitcher, you'll find out a pitcher, he mostly can't do nothing but pitch. He can't hit good. And every once in a while,
you got a few hits along the way.
Well, 50 years, Steve, I should have got something in 50 years. I played 50 years, you know, before I give up, for that concern. I stayed out of baseball, you know, around 10 and 14 years, and then go back into majors. You know, I'm the only one ever been in there full time. That's out in the spirit of sometime 10 and 15 years of going back into majors, I guess.
Bill Veeck told us about how you used to be something of a batting coach with Cleveland after one day you got two hits in one game.
Yeah, yes. I never forget that. It never happened one time. That was in Washington. And everybody liked to fill out. The people in the stand and everybody else, all the ball players, they wanted to give up. They say this is my lucky day, and I beat that game. And I did. I'm kind of proud of that, too, if you want me to tell you the truth.
Is it true that you would drive a nail into a plank with pitches from the pitcher's mound?
Well, I could hit them. I could knock a ball off a bat at the pitcher's mound. We set the bat up on home plate and put a ball on top of it, and I could out of three or four or five throws, I'd knock that ball off the bat. I could throw pretty straight. I'm not bragging or nothing like that, which a whole lot of people have seen me play. And there's few living yet to say I'm the oldest man on earth for that concern. But you're going to find out it's a whole lot of people when you go back home have seen me play and they're still living, because I ain't been too long left from over there now for that concern. But it's such a thing as I practice all the time. I just practice control. Anything you practice, you begin to come good at it. I don't know, regardless of what it is, whether it's baseball or not. I think I got so good in baseball once, 3-2, the batter was in a hole, not me, because I could get the third pitch in there just as good as I wanted to.
And it would probably be a fastball, because that was your pitch.
Yeah, well, here's what you're going to find out, too, again, when you start to talking about me after you leave here. Everybody, they say, if you tell me what he going to throw, I can hit it. That's the biggest story I've ever been told. Because if you're looking for a fastball on your knees and I throw it at your belt as fast as I had one back in there, I tell you, I'm doing around 90-some miles an hour with that ball right there. I can tell you that right now. And that's pretty fast, you know, from that little short distance up there.
Now, how about the story that you used to write fastball on the bottom of your left shoe so that when you put the foot up and the pitch was going to come, the batter could see the word fastball.
Well, they had that going, but to tell you the truth, that's not true. That's not true. And I'm not going to tell you no stories because I'm going to have to meet up with a lot of people now where this is going to go at. I'm going to meet them. Don't worry about a thing. And it ain't like nobody can't speak English like I used to play over in Cuba, and I could say anything because it couldn't speak English, you know, and it got back over here. But over here, it's different. See, I got to tell the truth over here. But I tell you, but that's not true.
Sash, one of the things they say about you is that when you were traveling with your all-stars, either you got good lodgings, good accommodations, or you didn't go. Now,
that's right. Because, see, we wasn't making much money, and my men had to play every day, and we wasn't eating the best on earth. You understand?
And you had problems, racial problems.
Yeah, we had too many racial problems. Racial problems so bad I don't want to even tell you about it as far as that concerned. If we had money, we'd have to go in the back to eat or eat out a paper sack or somewhere like that. But nevertheless, we overcome that, and it was rough. It was no maybe so. And when I would tell them I would come there, they'd have to find some place, you know, it wasn't staying in all hotels like you are now either.
Was this just the South or the North as well?
Well, some places in the North, too. It was a lot of them in the North. Washington and Baltimore and those places like that was just as bad as Mississippi or Georgia or any of those places down there for a colored man. It's no maybe so about it because I played baseball in both of them. I mean, all of them. And they'd have to get most of the times, obviously, we had a lot of colored hotels. There wasn't no big ones like you have now, but we had a lot of colored hotels, and whoever would want us in that town, they would rent the best of the rooms for me and guarantee that they get the two meals a day and like that. And then I would come in there like that. But we got in bad several times like that, but not the most of the times we did not. We didn't get in trouble after they found out I wouldn't come down unless they had some good place to stay.
Did you find that all that traveling just made your body feel weak? Was it hard to play baseball after you travel all night in the bus?
If you want me to tell you the truth, we had did it so much that it just come natural to us. We would ride sometime after we play like here tonight. We'd ride from here to St. Louis or from here to Chicago and play the next day. And I mean, we would beat the next day and not play the next day, and probably all we'd have would be a bologna sausage sandwich or a hot dog sandwich or something like that and a soda. And that was it. And stayed up all night. And then we'd play there. We might sleep three times out of a week, if you want me to tell you the truth. We'd be on travel in better than 1,500 or 1,600 miles. See, we carried a House of Davis, too, up in there. You don't remember, but the House of Davis, we used to carry them up there a lot, and we'd come out.
Bearded white fellas.
Yeah, with the long hair way down the back. You ain't got, the kids ain't got no hair now. They should have saw House of Davis. House of Davis had some hair and
but
some.
But they're good ball players.
Oh, tops. There was no maybe so about that. Now, they had some whiskers. They had whiskers down to their belts, and there's no maybe so about that, because I got some pictures I could show you. And we used to go up in there, and we'd draw pretty good, and we'd come out sometime through Seattle and round like that and make the round. You know how you make the round back through, Victoria and all up in there, and come on back down to Lewiston, Idaho, Billings, Montana. We'd make the whole circle up in that way all the time up there, and that's the only time we would do good with nights sleeping up in there.
Did you ever feel in trouble, I mean physically threatened, in danger because of the sheriffs and so on?
No, not me. I come out from down there. See, I was down there when I started playing ball. I was lucky enough to be good. I went to Chattanooga and I got sold, just like I told you in front. And then I went east. I went around Chicago and New York, and I started playing out there and around Pittsburgh. And that was way back. And that helped out a lot about me being away from there, too, which is just like anybody say, if you're born down there, you know how to act. And there's no maybe so about that. And we did know how to act. And a lot of them know how to act, but a lot of them got in trouble unnecessarily. And there's a lot of them, they just forced in trouble down there, too, is without a doubt.
Such a Negro baseball really can be divided, I think, into two parts. On the one hand, the organized ball, the Negro American League, the Negro National League, the Eastern Colored League, and so on. On the other hand, barnstorming. Now, you did plenty of both. Which did you prefer?
Barnstorming.
Wow.
I really did. Because we had a lot of fun back in that, right back when we used barnstorming. Everybody got a chance to see us. That's one thing. And we had a lot of fun, but now it's no fun, and it's a business. Baseball is a business now. And I talks to the kids all the time, and they don't get no fun out of baseball, but we did. So
what did you do? What was fun?
Well, we had a chance to go rifle shooting out around North Dakota, and we could play cards as long as we wanted, and we could play softball. We could do pretty near anything we wanted to do when we was born, Storm. We could go and swim, but they can't do that now. Which they're paying them all that money. They're paying them that money now, and they got to do just what they say do now. Instead of them getting up the next morning to look at the sports sheet, they're looking at the Wall Street Journal, see, because they got a lot of stock. They get so much, make so much money. So we never did make up that much money, but we loved baseball back in the day. Let me cut it short. We loved it. Now it's a money game. Let's face it, it's a money game now.
Well, you told me that barnstorming is more fun. I thought you were going to talk about what they used to call clowning or funning, what the Indianapolis clowns used to do, and what you did a little bit.
Well, the Indianapolis clown, we had a club to do that. All right, the House of Davis would play Pepper, and then the clowns, they had a show, and a number one show with Goose Tatum leading off here in King Tut. And we just had that show in the House of Davis. Then I would get with the House of Davis a lot of time and play Pep. I don't know if you've seen them play that or not, but they can.
How's it look?
It's really fun. You never will keep up with the ball, as far as that concerned. It's three men getting in a row, and you can't keep up with the ball. It's all between the legs, over the head, and everywhere else there. We're going to come back with that a little bit. You know, a lot of things we did back when we first come in, the big league said we was clowning, but I see they did a lot of things that we did back then, and when Bill Veeck come in with the firecrackers and things, they couldn't see no sense in it when he's giving away orchids and everything. Now everybody's copping off him with the school board and everything else. You understand me? It's just a time for them to do that, which they didn't know no better.
When you would call in the outfield, say, well, I will play only with an infield, that was a form of clowning, wasn't it?
Yeah, I give you that. Well, we was drawing, too, because if I got by with that, they would send to the next count, which I did get by with it every time, but I'd catch my man up there, catch my right-hand man. And you catch a right-hand man up there, and when my infield come in and start to talking to me, and I still be pitching to the batter and strike him out, well, see, that'll get to the next town the next day. See, all our towns about 200 and 300 miles, and then we'd have bigger crowds, and that got all over. Hell, when I go somewhere, I'd have to do that. And hell, we started drawing like the devil out there, like that then. And that was really did. I used to do that. The outfielders come in, too. Now, for the right-hand man up, I'd pull my center fielder, my left fielder, and my shortstop, my third baseman. They would come around the mountain and talk to me while I'd be pitching.
Satch, we heard a lot about the lighting system that the Monarchs used. Were you involved?
With the poles?
Yeah.
Yeah, we the first one invented that. We had those big engines like you see that pump water, and we had four big trucks. And we had our own lights, and we start those dynamos, and I guess these lights was about no more than 15 feet or 16 feet up. But you could see an infield. Well, the ball was hitting off you, shame on you. You couldn't see nobody. And why the people would come, you know, to see that, but the infield was lit up good. We never could get the, you know, in outfield, the light's high enough. We couldn't get a pole high enough. If it did, we couldn't carry it down the street. We didn't know about no joining pole back in that day. So the kid, sometime he'd hit the ball up, and you hear him say, I got it. He had two balls in their pocket. And when you know anything, see, he had the ball in his hand, but he don't know where that other ball don't fell out there. And you never would see it. And we used to get a good kick out of that. We really got a kick out of that. And we was the only one, we started that.
How did you get your nickname, Satchel?
I got my nickname through when I was a kid. I used to be down to the Mobile Bass Baseball Park, and I'd get all the foul balls and things and throw them back in, and the bursted balls and broke bats they'd give them to me. And when I'd come up to the school to play, I'd have all the tools to play with. And if they didn't let me play where I wanted to play, I'd take my things and go home and start to call me Satchel. That's how I got that name.
When you went barnstorming, we know you had advanced men and you sent out placards and all that. But after you got there and you wanted to increase the crowd, what did you do?
Well, the crowd was already there. We had out placards and it would be in the papers just like they do now in the big league. It was the same thing. And
did they have parades at all?
Well, sometime, that was way, now that was back, we used to have a parade back. It was a thing like what you haul hay on, and we had a band on it and the baseball players. That's just before the park.
What was that like? That must have been fun.
It was fun, and we'd be done put on our uniform, see, and we'd go all around through town with that band playing Dixieland, blah, 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 like that. And that would draw the people's attention for the night, and they had a big sign telling us where we were going to play, and I was going to pitch that night. And we used to have big crowds like that. And I had a hell of an all-star ball club, too. That's the next thing. Didn't nobody beat us. We could do anything we wanted to do. There were so many of us, just like I told you.
You make it sound like it was really fun days.
Oh, yeah, well, it was. It was, but you had to know what you was doing. Now, I had to have something on that ball because I didn't know the people, a lot of them I was playing against, and I just felt like I could do it, and I did do it. I could pass them up with the fastball.
You could challenge any batter.
I could throw pretty hard. And that's like I told you, after I found out I could throw hard is when I got in the big league in 1948. I had quit playing baseball.
You're the oldest rookie
ever played baseball.
Now, you won't tell us how old you were, but the official records say 42 in 1948.
Well, that's right. That's when I got in the league. Okay.
But a lot of people think that you're maybe a little bit longer in the tooth than that.
Well, they can't catch up with it. As many sport writers as you have in the United States. Now, I don't see. I laugh sometimes. I have to laugh. See, it's just like you here now. Okay, now you looking at me, and you wondering how come somebody don't get my age or can't get my age, and I do too. Now, of all the sport riders, and we got some old sport riders left yet, you know. And when I went to Cooperstown the other day, we had better than 2,000 or 3,000 of them up there, and they're all asking the same thing you asking about that age business.
Well, I don't
know. And they're way older than you. They're way older than you, and they haven't got it yet, and they've been around it. Right. 15 or 20 years, and they ain't got it. I'd expect for you to get it.
Well, let's take it off the top. You were 42 years old in 1948 when you played with the Cleveland Indians, and you're the oldest rookie ever, and you're also one of the best. Now, okay. What happened that year?
That year? Oh, I had a little luck in there then. I started off the relieving, and I saved 8 games relieving.
And you won 6.
Yeah.
Lost 1.
That's right. But, yeah, how I started. I started in Chicago there. We was up there.
One other statistic. Your first 3 starts, you drew over 200,000 paid customers.
Well, now you telling me something. That's what I tell you. We love baseball, and I was just pitching. I didn't wonder nothing like the kid doing now, how many I drew or something like that. I was just pitching out there.
Satch, after at least 50 years, probably more, a lot more since you started playing baseball. But now, when you think back on your career that's more than half a century, is there any one game that comes up to mind, any top game?
That was in Cleveland. When they was debating on who was going to start for Cleveland, we was coming back down to Chicago, and we had ran out of pitchers, and they wanted to know who to start. But the same man I went up to Cooperstown for just now, Warren Spahn, he had come close to beating us in Boston. And they picked me because I wasn't even thinking about him because I hadn't started a game in 15 years. And when they asked me what I think about it and how far could I go, and Boudreau asked me that, I told him, I don't know. He said, you think you could go 5? I said, I go 5 every day. He said, well, you think you could go 7? I said, I go 7 sometime. He said, well, hell, you can pitch 9. I said, well, I don't know that, but I say I'm going at it. And I say the way I'm going at it, I might give away, but I say, because I'm going at it for all I'm worth. He said, that's all I want to hear you say. He said, you pitching today. And that was one of my main ones right there then. I had been relieving, and so they tossed it up and say, well, says, I tell you what we do. Satchel ain't started in the last 20 years. He said, we'll start Satchel with Bob Feller and Bob Lemons in the bullpen. And okay, that's the way they did it. They got to Chicago. Well, they put it out in Chicago. I was going to start. Man, you couldn't get in 8 blocks of that baseball park for people. The park was full and it was still in the street.
Black and white book.
Yes, sir. They didn't pay it no mind that time. It was all out there. It was rubbing elbows together trying to get in that stadium out there. But you couldn't get no more. And that's the they never found out yet that how many people they had there. And so I started the game And when I started, Bob Phelan and Bob Lemon, they went to the bullpen, and they still down there yet. I finished that game. I shut Chicago. I Chicago come home, and I pitched again and shut them out again. And I went to Boston and went to Washington and went to the seventh inning before they made a run up. I like to have 36 scoreless innings in a row that year.
In the major leagues in your 40s.
That's right. I was in my 40s. And when I shut that club out, you know, it's a wonderful thing to think about some of those things that you said. And that was my best one.
Well, what kind of racial abuse did you get when you were with Cleveland? Did people ever yell any nasty race stuff at you?
Well, one or two of the baseball clubs did it, not the people in the fan. I had a couple of cracks from the baseball clubs. And
what did they say?
They said nigger. That's like that. Yeah, that, but I used to try to get my goat. I don't much blame them. I know it was all about it. There's some people I really know, too, that I wouldn't call their name for nothing in the world. Because they're too big a man, and they're still living, too, right now. And you know them, too. You know them well, too, and you wouldn't think they said it. But they're trying to say anything to get my goat to keep me from beating them. See, because I didn't drop it one game there, you know. That first year I got in there. And that was kind of hard for a stranger to come in there and strike out the men like I was striking out in there. You know, understand me? That's pretty rough to take. So they didn't say anything. They didn't care what they said. For that kind of time, they could have got me roused up, you know, where I'd walk somebody, I had to come out. That's what they were trying to do.
Thatcher, are you bitter about the fact that you didn't play in the major leagues at the time that you were at your peak?
Well, some parts. I won't say the majors. Where I was hurt the most at is when I went to Cleveland night and won the thing for Cleveland, and they wouldn't pitch me. They wouldn't start me. Now, I was a little peeved there. Me and my wife was, too, because everybody in the whole world was, too, but they had never said anything about it. But they couldn't help from being, not when I had won the whole thing for them, and they pitched everybody on the ball club but me. And I was top man in baseball, period, that year. Pitcher, top pitcher. And why they didn't pitch me, I don't know. But I had some ideas about that.
What's your idea?
Well, they had other pitchers there had been going good, and then I was colored, too, and that went against me. And it was a World Series, and all the rest of the kids wanted to pitch in the World Series, whether they was good pitchers or not. And so that's how it was. I have a right to be bitter because I was, after they found out I could play after I had stayed out of baseball 15 or 14 years, I was still cheated out of 15 or 16 years by Tony Melusin baseball. I don't know whether it was because of my age or what it was, but I know they did turn me loose. But yeah, what I can tell you, I was pitching number one baseball. Because after that, when the A's got me to pitch against Boston, and Boston was the hittingest ball club in the league, wasn't but one ball hit out of the infield in four innings, and that was the world champion baseball hitting club that year. So I had to be good then when they put all left-handers on me, too, in the front for the first time. They was going to clap me good if I hadn't had something on the ball. So I tell you, it's a long story about me was in that league then, how I got out and why they put me out. I don't know. There's some things that's wrong about me in the books, but it's not too much wrong. The most is wrong what they kick around a little bit, and you know that's my age for that concern.
Do you know what your age is?
Sure. But if I take it away now. Now, here what got me, got it stirred up with you now. See, they had This Is Your Life, and that's the first time they knowed I was married, and they even had any kids from the whole time I was in baseball, if you want me to tell you the truth. They didn't know what was going on with me.
I meant to ask you a minute ago. What was really the difference between black baseball and white baseball? Did they play the game exactly the same? You played in the major leagues.
No, we played it way different. We played when you could get a run to get a run. They played for a lot of runs. And that's the reason they never did beat us when they was barnstorming. See, they would wait for a big inning and everybody hitting. But they didn't figure, to tell you the truth, they never did figure we could play ball until Jackie Robinson went in. Then they found out we could play.
Was he a good choice for number one?
Yes, he was, because I'll tell you why, too. But it was who the big league wanted. See, they picked Jackie, and Jackie was on the bench with us. He was the Monarchs. Jackie was on the bench with the Monarchs when the big league.
He couldn't make the first team?
No, sorry, Bar. Now, you can get some letters for me if I'm wrong. Could make the first club. Could make the Monarchs.
Well, Newt Allen said that he couldn't make the shortstop because he couldn't make the long throw.
All right, what else could he make? Tell me this.
Second base.
Who are you going to be? He couldn't beat Newt Allen playing second. Newt Allen just told you that. It wasn't no way in the world for him to beat Newt Allen playing second. And he couldn't take Jesse Williams' place in shortstop. And he couldn't take Sewell's place on third. Let's face it. Couldn't take George Yount's place on first. Let's face it. If I'm telling you wrong, you get some letters. I get some letters for it. No, he's on the bench. And a lot of people hate to hear it, but that show you how great a ball club we had. And when you ask me, could we play any club? Sure, we could play club. We had a lot of men good as Jackie wasn't playing on the bench. Now, way back in that day, see, I was a top man in America. When I say in America, I mean both clubs. That's white and colored for pitching. And they couldn't have used me because I had only played against all the all-star clubs in Los Angeles, and they couldn't have booted me around like they did Jackie, you know, with those things. Cause I don't know if I could have took that or not. I can tell you now, I wouldn't have took it because I'd have felt like I was bigger than that. I didn't have to take that, you know, to stay up there. But see, he did it and made the record, and I don't know, before Jackie died, he looked like he was my grandpa, so that he got it going all right enough, nice, but it made him suffer a lot. He never did get over it.
How many no-hit games do you figure you were?
I wish I could think about them, think how many it was, because I know I pitched quite a few. But it's just like I told you, I wasn't a man that never thought about the baseball I was playing. I just likes to play. And sometimes, hell, you'd ask me what the score was 20 minutes after I pitched. I know I had done one, but I know it was 2-1 or 1-0 for that concern, because I was through with it for the next day.
How good were the Negro Leagues compared to the major leagues?
Tops. They was tops. We could take any club that we had in our league and play any one of the major leagues.
Any club in the Negro Leagues could play any club. The worst in the Negro Leagues could play the best in the major leagues.
Yes, sir. We had a lot of colored baseball players. Now, I'm going to show you, I'll give you a little instant on this. All right, you're letting us in with baseball. You're letting us in with baseball. You let us in with basketball. You let us in with football. So we had a lot of them. And don't you let nobody fool you. We had a lot of baseball players, top men. I wasn't the only Satchel back there. We had a lot of Satchels, but I just lasted longer than the rest of them. We had a lot of Satchel Pages back there. We had a lot of hell of a nice ball club. The Homestead Grays and Pittsburgh Crawfords, Birmingham, those clubs, the Yankees would have had hell beating them if you want me to tell you the truth. Just dry along. Don't add nothing with them. Just take the club. And you can see now the Alpha Leagues we have some tough ones. We have a lot of them, top superstars.
Do the black players in the major leagues today owe anything to you and the other players in the Negro Leagues?
Well, I don't know if they would go at it like that, but they should think about it, but I don't know whether they got them up so tight in the American League or the National League. When they get up, they never do say how they come up in baseball and who was their manager. I've never heard that yet. I was the honest one to ever say that for that concern. But I come up to make it pretty nice for the colored race in baseball, because when I come in, they wasn't playing in no white parks at all when I come in. And I was the cause of them playing in all white parks, and I was the cause of them barnstorming up until, like, they got up to it now and getting better salaries and everything. And I'm talking about me myself, because I had been out there pitching top baseball. I can't tell you how I pitched it and why I pitched it for a long time out there. And I got where I had to take care of the whole league out there, let alone one club. I had to go here and pitch, there and pitch, and I did that for 10 or 15 years in baseball out there.
You pitched doubleheaders?
Yeah, I pitched doubleheaders, and I pitched in high as three games. We had twilight games, too. We had a morning game and an evening game and a night game, and I pitched in all of them. I pitched in high as 164 ball games in a row. So I don't know whether they think they owe me anything or not, but from the way I'm telling you, you can figure that out for yourself.
Have y'all heard the news? Have they finally found? trillion light years away. But we're all gonna get there someday. Yes, we're all gonna get there one day. But not you. You stay and explain the suffering.
There he is. Thank you, Satchel. Thank you, Ernie Harwell. Thank you, Paul Simon. That's cool, Pop. That's a cool Papa Bell, Paul Simon. Great song right there. For those of you that are or not Paul Simon fans, maybe you're a Vampire Weekend fan. They're a popular band, very recent. And they pretty much just took Paul Simon, threw some bells and whistles on it, and that's Vampire Weekend. So if you like Vampire Weekend, you probably should love Paul Simon. And let's see, baseball. I got a big decision coming up. I may or may not go to a Royals-Dodgers spring training game this weekend. And it's a time thing. It's a money thing. But I haven't been to a baseball game in months, and it is the very first game of spring training. And I'll be with Mark Cassidy, previous guest of the Hillbenders, who are actually on tour right now with Keller Williams. I'm going to look this up because I don't know if they've announced the dates. But Keller Williams, who's a legendary musician in his own right, I guess is pairing up with Mark and Nolan and Jimmy and Gary and Gravy and everybody else, or that is the Hillbenders, and going on tour. But let's see here. They, Kentucky, North Carolina, Concord a bunch, Raleigh, Springfield, Illinois, St. Louis, Washington, Toms River, New Jersey. These are all shows coming up from February 16th, which is probably going to miss that one. But essentially, that's their tour for the next couple months. And then I think the Keller stuff starts later. But that's just going to be incredible. I can't even imagine. Because I've heard Gary do, or I'm sorry, Jimmy do some Petty in the past. And they're just great musicians. So that's going to be a great time. So I'll definitely keep you guys posted. And then if I can get some of those cuts, probably sample them on the show here. But other than that, I mean, the Hosmer thing, they're trying to make it sound like he's going to San Diego, and which I don't blame him. I mean, it's a nice city, man. I was just down there two nights ago and doing the comedy thing. The comedy, man, look, it's not all big crowds. It's not all 300 people ready to laugh, and working on material is brutal sometimes. And sometimes you just like, I got offered a 15-minute spot down in San Diego. I knew the guy really well. I've worked with him many times, working with him next month. A great guy, very funny. And so I go down there, and this is classic. This is what you deal with comedy. So you show up, and the guy that booked the show at this bar and grill, All Stars, which I'll get to that later, but I guess he had just quit. Didn't work there anymore. So the promotion was not there, and it just kind of turned into 6-7 comics and then audience members, 6 or 7 people, which came with the comedians. I was going up last, so you know where this is going. By the time I get up, there's really 3 people left. Well, the whole time there was this hookah bar lounge. So there was a bar set up, stage in the corner. Good setup, but right next to the bar, there's this door that goes out to the patio, which is the hookah patio. So there's some people out there having a great time, coming in, getting drinks, kind of interrupting the show periodically, going back outside. But they had speakers outside. So they would laugh at the jokes, and you would hear it come through into this relatively empty room. And it was like, it was weird. It was like seeing people perform in a closet, and then the audience is in another room, like on a closed circuit television, laughing, but you could hear their responses. Very strange, very strange. So by the time I get up, all the, quote, regular audience is gone for the most part in the bar, but all the hookah people are still out there, which is, I can see it now. It was 2 chubby girls, 1 kind of cute girl, 1 really passed out dude, 1 MMA, like smaller guy, and his drunk girlfriend who introduced him as Conor McGregor, and then a guy to his right in a booth and on a table. That was it. But I went out there with the mic. Like, I drove all the way down here. I was smart before the show. I stopped off downtown and I got a slice of pyramid pizza, which was fantastic. So I didn't think I was going to have time, or else I would have stopped at Don Carlos. But I'd already passed Don Carlos, went down, got some Chicago style deep dish Berkeley pizza. Excuse me, right on Fifth Street, an island, right downtown Gaslamp, San Diego. Great stuff. Walking back to my car, bump in to my old man Bill. And this is one of my old neighbors, and Bill was, or not, well, he was 97. I think he's 98 now, but he is a staple in downtown. If you're ever there for Comic-Con or you're visiting, going to see a baseball game, if you're ever, whatever, if you're down there, he lives right on Market, the corner of 3rd and Market, and he sits up there, he's in a good mood. You'd walk by and all you'd hear is, "Good afternoon, young man." And you couldn't help but stop and just say, who's this? Like, who's this guy? It's such a great mood, you know, just especially out of nowhere like that. And after he said that to me, I don't know, 5 times, finally one day I was like, I would be nice to him, be like, "How are you doing?" "Good, good," you know, and that whole thing. But then finally one day I actually stopped. And after that, it was great. Every time I saw the guy, I would just sit down, and sometimes it was one of those things where you had to time out the stops, because, you know, he sold real estate way back when in the 50s in the Valley, and before that was in Vegas, and loved the fact that I did comedy. So he wrote a couple books. He was dropping what else was it? Oh, he'd have one-liners all the time for me, just waiting. Just a solid guy. And I'm trying to find this video, right? Okay, here we go. So last year, I was excited just to see the dude. And last year, when he was 96, when I was down there, I stopped one time and talked to him, and I filmed it. And this is what I was rooting for. It's a little long-winded there, sorry. But anyway, this is William Duvall. If you're in San Diego, this is your guy. You need to talk to him.
I wanted to ask you, what's your favorite decade?
There are no doubt. Each day is a gift to enjoy. There's always something different. In other words, the era that I grew up in is gone forever. It was enjoyable then, but today you live with now. Nobody knows how long they're going to live. The billionaire, the pauper, all that. It's just the idea. You got to treat your life gently, though. That's the essence, because if you don't, you build up the pressures, and I don't have to tell you, the doctors are waiting with their bills and their pills. Sweet William, the 96-year-old Trollope's best friend, living a life of happiness is essential to your well-being. Remember, when you smile and laugh, your mind and body is relaxed. When you're uptight, you're angry, you blow your stack, the doctor and his blessed wife go on a nice cruise with your money. There are no experts on this planet. Each person has his or her own priorities. What is most important comes out of between your ears, not somebody's mouth. Keep the cool, don't put the rush act. Life is wonderful if you enjoy it. If you ever complain, think of the people who are in total darkness all their lives, the blind people. Walk of life once only. The billionaire, when the clock stops, all the Lamborghinis and Ferraris and Rolls Royces, finitoed. So enjoy your life in your own manner. If you're with someone and it ain't working out, isn't, ditch it or her or it, and get a fresh one. That's all I know, John. Nobody knows. Everyone, as I say, in having a different priority, has a different outlook on life. But the key thing is not to get into the morass, into the sad part of life. If you have a tough thing happen to you, use that as a stepping stone to go on to improve and make yourself happier. That's all that matters, is that you are happy in life. Nothing else. How much money you make, this and that, that doesn't cut the mustard. And whatever is going on in a pleasant way, in a happy way in your mind, That's the essence of life. That's everything. If something doesn't work out, drop it, forget it, and find something different. Fresh start, in other words, in life. A simple rule of life is work with your strength and something you enjoy. That is where it's at. Happy, I was wondering, really wondering about when you left town to go to LA, how things would work out for you. Because I have a feeling for nice people. The ones that aren't, they don't need me and I don't need them. That's the reality of life. So you are on the highway of success, slowly, carefully wending your way. Think carefully about each move you make. Is it helpful? Is it a negative type of thing? Stay the hell away from the negatives.
And get on the positive jump.
That's all you got. How about that, John?
That's good.
Is that pretty good?
See, and he liked me. You know, Bill's great. William Duvall, Mr. Duvall. I've got two of his books right over here on my mini bookshelf that he gave me. I actually was like, look, I'm giving you money. I know you want to. I donated to the Mr. Duvall, William Duvall Book Foundation. but where I was going with that is that run. So I got to see Bill again. And, you know, I'd play the old, hey, there's John. I know who you are. I'm like, oh, okay. Got caught up and then went on to the show. And then that whole incident happened. And I just want to let you guys know that have seen me live, I'm working on a Philly eating poop bit right now that I think will never probably ever make it to TV, but I'm very happy with the bit, and I'm gonna proceed to work on it a little bit longer, and you know, make sure it stays in my act, because I have that's one of the things you do when you've got as a comedian, like, you'll write bits that you love that the audience hates, and you're like, well, I don't care, it's funny. I want to point out every week that Philadelphia fans eat poop. That's just something I want to do from here on out. Okay, guys, that's it this week. Again, that was Black Diamonds. There's some other episodes you can find online if you would like to. I'm probably going to showcase some of those here in the coming episodes. Go on iTunes, rank us 5-star, leave a review, comment, all that kind of stuff. That'd be great. And if you know any sports fans that have commutes to work, have time, listen to podcasts, recommend the show. That would be fantastic. And then I'm trying to think, go do something this weekend. Just go see a concert, go bowling, just do something fun that you don't normally do. That's all, you know, just step out. I had some success with that this past week. Before that, One Love, went to the Queen Mary 2 weeks in a row, went on the ghost tours. You know, what I'm saying is just go do something different. You'll enjoy it. It's going to suck at first, but when it's all said and done, you'll be happy you did it. Guys, stay obsessed, and we'll be back very, very soon. I promise. Less than like this 10-day gap. I'm going to try to close the gap down to a week. All right? Cool. Burn it up with that island fever. Burn it up with that island fever. This is Jason J, by the way. Jason J. You need a minute, darling. I need a minute too. Cause I've been grinding gears through all these years in love with you. You needed something, darling. I needed something too. While you were searching around for the answer, I was in front of you. I said to girl, you're running all your makeup. You got what you want, and I was trapped in the middle. And in my mind, you know I won't make up. Fumble with my lyrics like I'm stuck in a riddle. I said, girl, you're running all your makeup. You got what you want, and I was trapped in the middle. And in my mind, you know I won't make up. Fumble with my lyrics like I'm stuck in a riddle. See? We burn it up with that island fever. We burn it up with that island fever. I was sick of each other, but you don't wanna be alone.
And when we're under the covers, you don't want to let it go. All energy is borrowed. And at the end of his life, we'll have to return it. So who are we to just burn it? All energy is borrowed. And at the end of his life, we'll have to return it. So who are we to just burn it? I said the girl, you're running on your makeup. You got what you want and I was trapped in the middle. And in my mind, you know I won't make up. Fumble with my lyrics like I'm stuck in a riddle. I said, girl, you're running all your makeup. You got what you want and I was trapped in the middle. And in my mind, you know I won't make up. Fumble with my lyrics like I'm stuck in a riddle. Say, we're burning up with that island fever. And then turning, we're burning up with that island fever. The way she's good for my body, but she's bad for my soul. We're burning up with that island fever. She got me hurting, yearning, tossing and turning. We're burning up with that island fever. The way she's good for my body, but she's bad for my soul. We're burning up with that island fever.